Speaking of this, also, we did catch up with economist Abednego Akanjo, and he is a petroleum economist, or deals majorly with petroleum-related aspects of the part of the economic side, trying to explain to us why the fuel prices go up and go down and all that kind of stuff. But then in this particular conversation, we did speak about the appreciation of the dollar in terms of how that affects fuel prices or fuel itself and having to buy the barrels. Let's take a listen to that conversation I had with economist Abednego Akanjo.
A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Abednego Akanjo, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon to you, Juju.
Pleasure to have you. Of course, we're talking about the Namibian dollar, which has shown appreciation and strong appreciation against the U.S. dollar since last year, December. And it's been actually steady throughout January. And now, since you're an economist that deals specifically with petroleum related products, kindly tell us what this dollar could mean. I mean, obviously, comparing it to barrels of oil, what could it actually mean in that aspect?
Yeah, thank you for hosting me, Juju. So we have also seen the appreciation of the NAM dollar against the U.S. dollar. Here at the ministry, when we do our fuel price calculations, so we have seen the Namibian dollar going from something like 19 per USD. At around 16 NAM dollars per USD. So this appreciation, it's actually a positive development for the petroleum industry in Namibia, specifically for the consumers, because what it means is that consumers when we import fuel into the country, we're actually paying less for that fuel. Because now the Namibian dollar is stronger against the USD. And remember, there is this thing of petrodollar. We keep hearing of petrodollar. So basically what that petrodollar means is that usually petroleum or oil, your diesels and your petrols, your jet fuel, etc., when they are traded in the international market, these transactions usually happen with the use of the American dollar. So if you're a Namibian business that is aiming to import petroleum products from, let's say, from Asia or from any other place in the international market, what you then have to do is exchange your NAM dollars into US dollars. So a stronger U.S. dollar means you will have to fork out
more money,
more NAM dollars just for you to import these petroleum products. However, a weaker U.S. dollar, a stronger Namibia dollar means that you don't have to fork out as much NAM dollars for you to import these petroleum products. And then this ultimately translates to the pumps, because when the calculations, when we factor in a stronger NAM dollar into the calculations, we are more likely to end up with a situation where we are recording over recoveries on the current prices. So when you record over recoveries on the current prices, it then signals that there is a need to reduce prices. So the strengthening of the NAM dollar against the US dollar is a good thing, especially for Namibian fuel consumers.
Interesting. Just how sustainable then is the fuel price relief driven by exchange rate gains, particularly in a market where the Namibian dollar is pegged to the South African rand?
Yeah, on the question of sustainability, It really depends on what happens in that market, because remember, there is also a currency market. And that currency market is not really within the control of government.
Yeah.
The currency market, similar to the commodity market, is also influenced by a host of many factors, international factors that at times are beyond our control. So when we talk of sustainability, you can only hope that this strengthening of the NAM dollar continues into the future. But one can never make accurate predictions to say for the next 6 months or so, we are projecting that the NAM dollar will keep strengthening against the US dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So with these markets, anything is possible. You might see again next month the NAM dollar weakening or strengthening. You never know, and these things are influenced by a lot of international factors, whether it's demand or supply factors, currency demand, currency supply. Because if there is a demand for that currency, then that currency will strengthen. However, if demand for that currency is weakening, then that's where you see that currency or also weakening. So these are all the host of international factors that have an effect on sustainability as far as currencies are concerned.
Mm, interesting, Mr. Abednego. Now, of course, what other factors perhaps could help in improved energy stability, that is, of course, within Namibia, fuel pricing and energy security outlook? Is there something specifically that then we can also do to ensure that the dollar remains strong against that the Namibian dollar remains strong against the US dollar, so that, of course, our oil prices remain stable and not actually increase?
Yeah, I mean, one of the mechanisms that we have put in place is what we call the fuel equalization levy. So this is money that is collected through the National Energy Fund. So whenever you have high market volatility, and this volatility can be volatility in terms of barrel prices, in terms of shipping costs, in terms of the exchange rate. So how the way that we manage this volatility is in terms of market stability, when the market is not really that volatile. We collect funds, equalization fund, the National Energy Fund, in anticipation for when the market is highly volatile. So when the market becomes highly volatile and we are recording high under recoveries on the prices of fuel, then that's when the National Energy Fund usually steps in just to cushion the prices or to absorb some of these under recoveries on behalf of the consumer. So you might find the situation where maybe the ministry, had it not been for the National Energy Fund, for the existence of the NEF, will end up increasing prices by, let's say, two NAM dollars. But because of the existence of the NEF and the equalization funds thereof, the ministry will then just increase prices by, let's say, 50 cents, and then the NEF steps in to absorb this volatility on behalf of consumers. Yeah, so these are some of the interventions. This is one of the main interventions that government has put in place to ensure that we keep stability within the oil market, the local oil market.
Interesting. Okay. Anything perhaps that I didn't ask, Mr. Akanjo, that you would want to share with us for our knowledge and benefit in regards to this particular topic that we're dealing with?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to currencies, the determinants of these exchange rates are many. But mainly, if you look at demand and supply for a certain currency, and let us also not forget what is currently happening in the United States of America, with all the protectionist policies of Donald Trump. I think it's shaking up the currency market. And perhaps that is why we see the US dollar losing value against some of our currencies, because the news that is also coming out at the present moment is like some countries are penning deals with the likes of China, where trade is happening in Chinese yuan instead of US dollars. So this also have an effect. All these policies of the Trump administration are the protectionist policies that they are busy implementing in the United States of America, I believe have an effect on what is currently happening to the US dollar. If this trend continues, we might actually come to a situation where a lot of trade moves away from the US dollar and maybe move to currencies such as the Chinese yuan. And if you look, there are already deals that have been penned to take place in Chinese yuan. So this is also the other aspect of it, I think, which is busy shaking up the currency market.
Interesting. Quite interesting here. Mr. Abbott, thank you so much. Abednego, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
No worries. Thank you for hosting me.
Okay. And with that being said, let's pause here now. We'll be back shortly after the commercial break to still speak on this.
Lipura nengeno wapongwa eva tere ulikoni maondo doto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota enjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And although I had tackled this already with Dr. Omuka Kuyomatundu, let's take still a lesson to this in the context and understanding how he explains, he too being an economist, and how he explains from the very get-go of Namibia being pegged to the South African rand.
Yes, Happy. Whenever we are talking about the Namibian dollar, we should always think about the South African rand, because that is our anchor economy as well as our anchor currency, meaning that whatever is happening to the rand is going to affect the Namibian dollar because we are pegged one-to-one, and South African economy is a bigger economy. Now, there are a couple of things to come to your question that basically strengthening the South African rand. It is the Fed policy, that is the American Federal Reserve low interest rate regime that they have started under Trump's pressure to pressure them to lower interest rates in the U.S. That means that there won't be any capital flight from South Africa to the United States. It could only have happened if they have increased their rates. Now that their rates that side are lower, money is going to look for good profitable rates, and then they'll stay in South Africa or they come to South Africa. So the risk appetite, that is investment risk appetite, is growing for South Africa, meaning that they want to bring their money to South Africa as well as other investors. It could be you trying to invest in a big factory in South Africa or so. The other thing that the world was fearing of, or investors were fearing of not investing in South Africa is the GNU, the Government of National Unity, which seems to hold very well. So the stability of that, I think there are problems here and there in the GNU, but otherwise it has held very well over the past year or so. Mm-hmm. The other thing, energy and logistics. You see, what we have seen are blackouts before, let's say, last year, and now they call them load sheddings. Yeah. Or load shedding.
Load shedding,
yeah. Load shedding affect economic growth through reduced production of companies. And also, you don't want to come to a country where electricity supply is erratic, for instance. I think now... we haven't seen that for almost a year, I should say. So all these are counting in favor of the South African rand, as well as also influencing the strength of the Namibian dollar. There are still some down risks going forward, but what we have seen yesterday, the de-escalation of Trump war rhetoric, trying to attack Iran, Greenland, etc., that could have affected the price of crude oil. But what we are now seeing is that that tension seems to be escalating a little, I should say a bit, and we'll see that the price of Brent crude oil is now hovering around $62-$63, which is quite okay. Mm-hmm. So when we import that oil, we are going not to spend a lot of our dollars, and that could make our economies grow, which is going to attract investors. No one wants to invest in a country where economy growth is very low, so I think economic growth is going to pick up. And lastly, you have seen also towards the end of last year, we have seen credit rating agencies upgrading, if I may say so, South Africa to stable. To stable. So that is some good news, and I hopefully that is going to hold on like that. Even though sometimes we say a very strong currency can also affect your exports, but at 16 dollars Namibian dollars or South African rand to one US dollar is not very high, and I think that can be good.
Dr. Omu, do you think perhaps we could maintain this for a very long time and perhaps even furthermore grow stronger? And what
specific things that maybe could help then Namibia to actually strengthen itself against the US dollar, that perhaps we, the economists, can do, or Namibia itself can actually leverage itself. And but the question majorly is, do you think we can maintain this for a long time?
Yes, yes. The problem is that there are so much uncertainty, geopolitical and otherwise. Yeah, the global economy could have a shock here and there, but I think overall things looks a little bit up. But as I have also said, we don't want to see a very strong rand, but sometimes because these are free floating currencies.
Yeah.
When things are very okay our side, that is, our economies are growing very well, when it comes to things like our energy supply, our water supply, and when we come back home to Namibia, for instance, what we should try and do to grow this economy is to try and have cheaper or less expensive energy and water supply. You have seen that, for instance, local authorities and other instances are owing NamWater something like 2.6 billion or so.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, partly blamed on very high water tariffs. That so if we have such high water tariffs as well as electricity tariffs, what will happen is that we won't attract investors. Investors want to come and make profits, and if the cost is very high, then they won't come. So those are some of the things that both South Africa and Namibia should work very hard on, and also logistics, good roads, good transportation to Walvis Bay or to Durban, etc.
Yeah.
If we don't work hard on those, then we are going, of course, to affect economic growth, affect employment levels, and sometimes also lead to political instability or unrest because of unemployment and people protesting all over the place, and no one will come to our area. And then, of course, the rand and the Namibian dollar is going to nosedive, meaning that it's going to lose their value.
Mm. Now, one thing I've also come to realize is that the Namibian dollar Namibian currency is very strong, also compared to other African countries, which I found very, very interesting. That you know, when you travel to probably even these countries, you tend to be way more richer, obviously, than you normally are. But yeah, just how does that place Namibia then when we compare it to other African countries?
Yes, sometimes a currency is a reflection of your economy and how attractive your economy is, how the level at which it attracts FDI, that is the attractiveness, how much do others want your currency or to hold your currency.
Yeah.
If you have a useless currency that is almost like a toilet paper is even worse than anything else. That is the most important paper that has ever been invented. But if your money is useless and no one wants to hold it, of course, it is going to be very weak.
Mm.
But sometimes there is also another side where countries devalue or keep their currencies weak so that they can sell more to the outside world. Let's say we hear that one country X in Africa, if you go there with your 2,000 Namibian dollars,
mm-hmm.
you can sleep in a very nice hotel. Happy when you and me run to that country
mm-hmm.
and spend our money in that country.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes a weaker currency is not all that bad. But if it is so weak that you can buy almost no nothing with it in terms of imports, like importing oil, essential medical supplies, machinery, etc., then that is bad. But generally, it's good that the Namibian dollar is not that weak, mm-hmm. that we are having a currency that is holding, and it is an indicator of the way our economies, that is South Africa and Namibia, are doing.
Mm, interesting. Now, Dr. Omu, something completely different, and I like how you mentioned it while we're in passing. Yesterday, I covered a story in regards to local authorities and regional councils owing entities or money owed in regards to water, and how generally they go after water entities. Some go after households who owe about $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, yet, and cut off their water bill, yet don't cut off big institutions and entities that owe about $500,000 Namibian. And this was brought to light as the Minister of Rural Development, Urban and Rural Development, James Sankwasa, spoke the other time. So, Doctor, from an economic perspective, why is this that which entities are doing very wrong? Because you go after the small fish and yet leave the big shark.
Okay, that is wrong, of course, but I think everyone is struggling. And when you have seen that list of who owe NAM water what amounts, you'll see that most of those are local authorities. What I think is that we had created unsustainably local authorities. Small towns, you have Kochas, you have Otsinene, you have Okalongo, small local authorities that find it very difficult to generate their own revenue out of, let's say, electricity and water tariffs. And you want them to pay, you want them to do road works, you want them to do other things. So definitely they won't have money. And if that is the case, if we go that way, then government should cough up and pay. Because those guys, local authorities, they don't have the money. The other thing is also your priorities. That is culture. Sometimes you pay your other things, go to movies and whatever, and that movies and whatever, I mean, even niceties for local authorities, like going on bench marking trips, etc., instead of paying your water bills. So priorities are also very important. And culture, even at households, the first thing that you should try and do is to pay your water and electricity bills. But sometimes you don't just have the money, because whole households of 10, no one in that household is employed. Mm. A couple of them lost their jobs during COVID. Some of them, because of their very high unemployment rate in this country, never had jobs, and they have to be carried by their relatives. And poverty, and that is driven by unemployment, that is also affecting households. Now, for you to come and pressurize the weak and leave the stronger ones, like government departments, etc., no, that is very unfair. But definitely, what can be done? Water is a basic human right. What can government come up with? Is to try and see how they can make water less expensive, trying to see how they can assist NAM water to try and bring the tariffs down. NAM water is operating on a cost recovery basis, but some cost recovery doesn't mean it'll be cheap. The NAM water will apply through to get a certain tariff,
mm-hmm.
but if it is not politically correct, cabinet won't approve it. They approve mm-hmm. a lower tariff that won't that will make it also very difficult for them to come up with new water water works, if I may call them that way. And lastly, this government is sleeping on the job. What we mm-hmm. have basically tried for so many years is to try and have another desalination plant that is cleaning or desalinating, taking salt out of the seawater and try to bring that water inland. And that could make water less expensive and affordable to households as well as to companies. And mind you, that is, as we have said in the beginning, make your economy grow through agricultural projects, through companies setting up, because water in Namibia is cheaper, etc.
Yeah. You know, Doctor, I don't know. I begin to ask myself, we get rain, you know, in the beginning of the year, and heavy rain, and obviously this water gets wasted. And maybe we need to get perhaps those who really work at with the storage facilities and all that, what it actually entails or what it requires. I'm always of the opinion, and I hear a lot of people also say the same thing, can't we store more water so that we can be able to then use it all throughout the year, because then obviously we're cutting down also on the fact that water is scarce later on, especially when it hasn't so rained so good.
Yes, Happy. They call it water harvesting, and that is okay. We harvest water in our big dams, if I may say so, but it could be done at a very local level. But mind you, that water needs to be cleaned. It won't just come straight to you. And that water needs to be transported. And that water, because of our very intense heat, can evaporate. That water, let's say we have water somewhere, it should be transported, let's say, to Vent Hook, to be stored underground. You cannot store water just in the open like that.
Mm-hmm.
You should try and store it underground. And what do you need? Electricity to pump that water. And electricity is also very expensive. So it's a catch-22, but it can be worked on with political will, with the right priorities, trying to not spread ourselves very thin when it comes to development objectives, but say let's make water, cheaper water and electricity a priority that can be done.
Interesting. Indeed. Dr. Omu, I always appreciate your time with us because you always educate us. I learn one or two things whenever you do speak to us right here on the Reading News Analysis. So thank you so much for making time for us.
Oh, great pleasure, and thank you for having me.
And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back shortly with economic indicators right here on your number one talk radio station. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, hura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And since it's Monday, the Villager e-paper is available this very day, and it covers the following headlines. Geo-economic confrontation and immediate threat. Uvungu Vungu Green Scheme to boost seasonal employment. Building plans declined by 35.7% in December 2025. MTC, MVA Fund, hand Shanika Nashilongo Senior Secondary School 8 new classrooms. Olympic Committee celebrates young athletes. Now grab your copy and read up on this social and economic news in the Villagers newspaper for today, Monday, the 26th of January, 2026. Of course, also find something on sports right there and other topics within the paper. Now, the Villager e-paper is available every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and it is free of charge. All you have to do is send a text message, to 081-200-4144. That is a WhatsApp text message. Let's now bring you economic indicators. Now, today, $1 is equals to 15.98 Namibian dollars. It really does show that the Namibian currency is showing appreciation against the US dollar. Now, one Australian dollar is equals to 10 Namibian dollars and 97 cents. One Swiss franc is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 56 cents. One euro is equals to 18 Namibian dollars point 94 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 84 cents. While one Botswana pula is equals to $1.16. Let's pause here now and bring you news beyond the borders of Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ripuranenge no wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oikindi konu konda jire nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumuna oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onmareza tuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Now let's move over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off regionally, moving over to continental news. Thereafter, international news comes your way. Now starting off in South Africa and South Africa's economy. South Africa's economic recovery is gathering momentum as gold soars amid South Africa's economic recovery is gathering momentum as gold soars and the rand strengthens. And you do know that the American dollar is pegged, the South African dollar is pegged to the Namibian rand. So let's take a listen to that.
Surged to an all-time record high of over $5,000 an ounce. The rand has also strengthened to below 16 rand to the dollar for the first time in almost 4 years. And of course, to unpack this and tell us about the gold and rand rally, I am joined in studio by SABC News' economics editor, Tsepo Mungai, who of course is giving us some details around the impact. What does the good news mean when it comes to the country's economic recovery and the impact on South Africans, ordinary South Africans who are hoping, of course, to get some leverage out of the good news? So to expand on the conversation, We have in studio Tsepo Mongai, of course, giving us a sense of the impact. Gold surging past $5,000 an ounce for the first time in nearly 4 years. Tsepo, very good afternoon to you. What do we owe this to?
Well, many of the analysts actually were expecting gold to have reached these levels, the current level of over 5,000 by end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
This actually tells you how things are actually moving rapidly, but of course in the right direction. So we have seen this morning on the JSE, the JSE, of course, doing very, very well at 120,000 levels.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the main driver were the resources, which were up around 3%. As you see, most of the gold counters, of course, gained over 3%, 4%.
Uh-huh.
And it's indicative of the risk aversion that we are seeing globally. And of course, investors are seeking those safe haven space, which gold provides.
Yeah.
And of course, for the JSE, you can't think of any other boss globally that gives you such a good exposure to gold. And that's why we are also seeing the JSE, of course, continue to touch record levels on the back of mainly the yellow metal, the gold price. Mm-hmm. But we've also seen a very good performance coming through in other base metal. I mean, you can think of palladium, platinum,
yeah.
Silver also continues to shine.
So is this price level more about global uncertainty, inflation fears, or is it specific geopolitical risks as we try and get a bigger sense of the other influential factors?
Well it's a combination of factors that you have actually alluded to.
Mm.
I mean, the US, of course, expectations are that the Fed will probably maybe would cut interest rates. There's that expectation that the Federal Reserve is really under pressure,
yeah,
from the administration to do something about it, and some actually believe that they would be cutting. And of course, when it comes to that, we have interest rate differentials where investors would actually look for higher returns, and you can't think of any, because we actually still offer much, much higher returns.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the US, which would offer anything around 4%. We still, our rates are still much, much, much higher. I mean, if you think of, for example, the repo, which is over 6%. So you get a little bit more when it comes to such benchmarks.
Yeah.
But also it's the uncertainty that we are seeing globally, where people are worried about what would be the impact of the tariffs, what would be the impact of the AI, which has been the field that's driving the surge in global stock markets. What would happen if we lose that momentum? So there are a whole lot of issues, issues of Greenland, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What is it going to happen? Is it going to be a military or not? And indeed, we can't preempt President Trump, what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So when investors are sent to ask those questions and they are not able to come up with definite answers, it makes it very, very, very jittery for them.
And very quickly, Tsepo, before we let you go, what about ordinary South Africans and savers who are, you know, battling on one end with the challenges of the impact of things like foot and mouth disease? I mean, meat prices have gone up. But of course, some ease coming up when it comes to the price of fuel.
Well, there is a good South African story, I must say. I mean, you touch on inflation. Our inflation has really been coming down. Of course, we've seen last week's number. There was a small movement upward, but the economists are telling us this shouldn't concern us that much.
Mm-hmm.
Because the overall picture is that of inflation that will continue to remain stable. And indeed, the Reserve Bank is also expressed a similar view that inflation will remain contained. And they're quite confident, even if we might have temporary upward movement in the rate of inflation. But for many South Africans, of course, they would enjoy a stability in terms of price movements when they are shopping. So there is some good news there. But then, of course, the the increase in the gold price, it means that our miners will actually benefit. Mm-hmm. Jobs would be a little bit more secured in the mining sector, and of course the wage that they are demanding. Albeit, I don't think we will see any significant movement upward of 4%. We may see maybe around 4% wage increases, but indeed the sector will be able to stomach those kind of increases, and at times even a little bit more, because I'm sure workers will demand more as they see this gold
Absolutely.
Price.
Thank you very much. Leaving it there for now, SABC News economics editor Tsepo Mongaile giving us a sense of the impact of the gold price. With that, let's take a look.
Also, in South Africa, still, Cape Town Airport sets new traffic record in 2025.
Town is fast becoming one of the most attractive holiday destinations in the world. Both local and international tourists are drawn to the mother city throughout the year by her fair weather and various popular attractions, including Robben Island, Table Mountain, and Cape Point, and the record-breaking figure of more than 11 million two-way passengers who traveled through Cape Town International Airport during 2025 is a strong sign of a booming tourism sector. A festive season record was also achieved when around 1 million passengers traveled through the airport during the month of December alone.
Like the success we've had now over the festive season isn't just because of the work we've done there. It takes years and months of planning and delivery of marketing campaigns, and we've done some amazing campaigns over the last 12 months that has, of course, filled those airlines. We've got about 228 flights a week to Cape Town International. Again, those are records. And it's our marketing campaigns that actually fill those seats. So what we're excited about is continuing to push those campaigns. Our international campaign with New York and Berlin will continue to amplify. We've also, of course, got our local campaigns like 50 Things to Do in Cape Town for under 50 Rand, because we also understand the importance of affordability for South Africans, especially in these tough times.
The city of Cape Town says the increased visitor numbers are a strong signal indicating that coordinated efforts between government and the aviation industry is delivering improved results.
It's clear that aviation is driving our tourism economy, and even clearer that our smart campaigns, backed by conversion, airline partnerships, city-to-city agreements, and a focused air access strategy are working. Tourism now employs 106,000 Cape Townians, and I'm determined to see that number grow. More flights mean more jobs and more economic growth for our local economy.
Visiting Table Mountain and riding the cable car up and down the mountain is one of the most popular activities for tourists. And visitor numbers for 2025 have also shown a steady improvement.
If I look back at season, it was just spectacular in general. For us, it was a mixed bag. We had close to 11 days where we suspended operations. And obviously this has a knock-on effect on queue times and people wanting to come up to the mountain. However, overall, we did remarkably better despite the number of closed days, and we are very happy with the outcome.
At the waterfront, around 3 million visitors were recorded during December.
So we've had a very positive festive period. Of course, the majority of our visitors would come from upcountry. So local tourism over December really dominates in the V&A waterfront. But of course, as you would have seen with the AXA numbers, we've got a lot of international tourists that have come in. And in the waterfront, a key part of that is also the cruise coming into Cape Town. And that's been growing. So we're very happy with the performance from a tourism perspective.
Some domestic and international tourists also shared why they chose to visit Cape Town.
Cape Town is always lovely. People are always friendly. It's a good time. No matter what time of the year you come, it's great.
Now we flew over with all of the family to enjoy Cape Town, enjoy the sun, enjoy the country. Nice people, beautiful city. So it's worth 12 hours in the plane. So it's a very nice
time?
Cape Town is really the remote but the best attraction about all Africa. You guys travel all Africa except the exception about the western side, because it's quite really difficult just to travel. But Cape Town is the best destination of South Africa, of the Africa.
The city of Cape Town says the continued growth in the tourism sector will provide a massive boost for economic growth in the city, helping to create more jobs and improve livelihoods for locals. Corbin August, SABC News, Cape Town.
Meanwhile, investigation is launched after ballot papers were found in a Pretoria house. Pardon me for today.
Ballot papers believed to be from the ANC's regional conference that took place in December last year have been found in a house in Pretoria. Allegations of procedural irregularities have been made by Johannesburg Mayor Dada Morero, who lost to Johannesburg MMC for finance Loiso Masuku in the race for chairmanship of the powerful region. The ANC's number one says he's waiting for the reports detailing what happened. The ANC convener of deploys in Gauteng, Kumudza Ntshavheni, also went to the scene to assess the situation.
The process, and then I'll get the report. Okay. So much as you would like me to respond.
Because local government is close to you and close to your heart.
Very close to my heart, so allow me to get the report first. Thereafter, I'll be able to respond to you. I know you would like an instant answer, but some of these matters one has to give consideration to.
Meanwhile, ANC president says accountability is a non-negotiable for party members that are deployed to government. He says those who do not perform must be booted out.
This Lekgotla has stated that we cannot compromise on accountability. We cannot and must refuse to accept poor performance. We cannot accept people who abuse the trust of our people and waste public resources. We must have the courage to replace deployees who are not performing the tasks that they are given.
The ANC says it will now focus on actions and implementation. Ramaphosa lauded the reports coming out of the Lekgotla for setting out clear dates and timeframes.
We will implement mechanisms for monitoring, evaluation and accountability so that our decisions in this regard are based on evidence and are not driven by factional or personal interests. We have received the reports from the commissions, and these reports will be consolidated into the Lekgotla outcomes document and the ANC program of action for 2026. Our focus will now be on implementation. Our focus must be on getting things done.
All right, so to this
and
now,
making a real and lasting difference in the lives of our people.
The detailed report will be sent out to ANC structures on Tuesday to guide the party's work. Natasha Piri, SABC News, Gertrude Ekurhuleni.
Let's take a listen to global inequality on billionaires and political influence. As a new Oxfam report has shown that billionaires are 4,000 times more likely to hold political office than ordinary citizens. Let's take a listen.
A new Oxfam report shows that billionaires are 4,000 more times likely to hold a political office than ordinary citizens. The annual inequalities report also shows that a number of billionaires has surpassed the 3,000 mark for the first time, and the level of billionaire wealth is now higher than at any time in history. At the same time, one in four people globally face hunger. I'm joined now in studio by Isabel Fryer, Oxfam Policy Advisor. Isabel, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, these are staggering, terrifying, really, numbers. Billionaire wealth has grown three times faster than in the previous 5 years. What do you make of this?
Thanks very much for having me and having this conversation.
A major economic milestone.
Especially following on from South Africa's G20 last year, where President Ramaphosa commissioned the Stiglitz report on inequality. This is a really important conversation for us to be leading with in South Africa. The Davos report that you refer to, which was released last week in Davos, is a significant call to action to change things. The rate and acceleration of the growth of the wealth of billionaires is almost exponential. And the problem is that when billionaires make money, you've got to ask along the value chain who's losing out on that. And so one of the other statistics in the report is that the $2.5 trillion growth that billionaires made last year, so just in 2025, the accumulated growth was $2.5 trillion, and that could have solved world poverty 26 times over. So it's not about the fact that we do not have the resources. It's the allocation, and it's also the reduction of the kinds of regulations that used to monitor excess growth. And so we look at things like taxation. We look at the ways in which monopolies are allowed to accumulate, and the fact that within that, you see the rise of oligarchies, which in fact means the control of political power by a few, usually because of the wealth. And so in the past, Oxfam's also looked at the building of elite pacts between the political elite and the wealthy elite. So where you see Trump being in office and reducing the kinds of tax rates on corporations, the refusal to sign America up for a global minimum wealth tax on global corporations. There is a very strong and steady path towards the reduction of the control by states. Mm-hmm. And that means that the smaller person, the middle classes, the working classes, and the unemployed, they completely are cut out of any kind of benefit.
And then end up in the one out of four people who are facing hunger, right? So would you say then this $2.5 trillion growth that you say could eradicate poverty 26 times over? Yeah. Is this a failure then on economics, Isabel, or on a political will?
We need to accept that it's built over a number of decades. And in the mid-1980s and 1990s, we started to see the dismantling of regulation. So prior to that, especially in the global north, you had the notion of the welfare state, where the state was at the heart of regulating distribution, seeing where excesses were worked and redistributing. Because, that's in essence what we're looking at, is the health and wealth of economies. And we saw the rise of a neoliberal economics that said, like, big is great. Billionaires are good people because they're making a lot of money. And so the demise of the amount of wealth, global wealth, going to states. So, for instance, one trip to the moon, like how many hospitals could be built? And where a hospital is built, not only are people involved and getting jobs in the construction, nurses and doctors are employed. So you have that beneficial. People's health is being addressed. And all in all, so when they're sick, they take fewer days off in terms of sick leave. So those are the beneficial cycles which are being reduced, because instead we see the reduction of kinds of regulations. But also we get told that if the wealthy make a lot of money, the wealth will trickle down. But it doesn't.
That's right.
So instead you see the rise of a couple of 3,000 billionaires globally, at the cost of misery. And not only is it misery of individuals who don't have food to eat, but it's also the kinds of activities undertaken by billionaires, the private jets, the trips to the moon. They all have a significant impact on our environments as well. And we know that the world is struggling in terms of emissions. And these are not the activities that aid a healthy world and a healthy population.
I want to venture slightly into the moral questions before we return into the findings of the report. But why do you think this is? Why do you think that society takes billionaires or people with money more seriously than they would the destitute?
It's a really interesting question. We were chatting about this offline, and there has to be a reason why the rise of somebody who has more than me makes me think that they are better than me. But also, I mean, if you look at the fact that a large number of global, 7 out of the 10 top global media houses are owned by billionaires. I'm not asking who owns yours. but the point is that the narrative is then dictated by the people who own the means of media communication. Mm. So where we see somebody who is driving their Maserati to their penthouse, that becomes the aspiration that we have. And so we think that they are better people, whereas the parents who struggle to send their kids to school, the single mom who's not able to, who has to rely on scholar transport rather than having a driver take her child to school, those kinds of inequalities are erased. And instead, we look at the single success story which society describes success to. I mean, what is a good person? That takes us down to the existential crisis. Sure. And as you were saying earlier, where we are globally is a crisis. Indicative. Now we need to start unpacking what got us there.
Yeah.
And the report also shows how to get us back to a better path.
So
let's move on to Zambia now, where President Hakainde Hichilema of Zambia has noted or spoken out that peace and unity are key to Zambia's growth.
The church is filled with reverence as the congregation gathers in praise and worship. Yet this is no ordinary Sunday for the UCZ St. Paul's congregation in Kasama, as the special assistant to the president for politics, Levi Ngoma, joins them in worship. He is accompanied by the UPND Kasama mayoral campaign manager, Chipoka Mulenga, and mayoral candidate, Baiwo Siposia. Mr. Ngoma brings a message from President Hakainde Hichilema, one focused on promoting peace, love, and unity as opposed to division.
If you are able to push the abuse, they have been number one. But if we can increase, I'm a year's young president who take a channel. They have been 35 years, 10 year president, become 7 years. Conclusion.
He's grateful to the president of the Republic of Zambia for demonstrating a strong political will, which has resulted in having peaceful political campaigns in Kasama. The bishop believes that having a peaceful atmosphere before and during elections, like the one we are having, gives people or the electorates an opportunity to elect leaders of their own choice freely.
And during the service, Mr. Mulenga took a moment to introduce Mr. Siposia to the congregation, further praising the peaceful atmosphere that has prevailed throughout the campaign period.
We want to thank God for the peace that is prevailing in Kasama. We do not take it for granted. The president has always been talking about peace to prevail in our country, and it is prevailing. Not only because the president spoke, but because the president spoke and the church prayed. And the church prayed, among the churches, the UCZ prayed for peace. And peace is prevailing in Mutawa Chesu.
Later, Mr. Ngoma, together with Mr. Siposia, visited the Pentecostal Assemblies of God Church, where Mr. Siposia is a member. There, he shared a similar message and urged the congregation to pray for their leaders.
Unity is what attracts blessings from God. The Bible says how good and pleasant it is when brethren dwell together in unity, because on that unity, God commands a blessing. That's what it is. So if you want an apparel, unity first. That's why the president says every time he talks about one Zambia, one nation.
Here the message was also about peace.
One body of Christ without mercy. Amen.
Mr. Ngoma assured both congregations that President Hichilema remains committed to supporting the church's effort, recognizing it as a vital partner in development. Ruth Chainda, ZNBC News, Kasama.
Nairobi's new stadium nears completion ahead of the 2027 Africa Cup of Nations.
2025 AFCON in Morocco is now in the rearview mirror, and the continent is facing east for the next edition. In Nairobi, the capital of one of the three co-hosts, Kenya, a new sporting landmark has taken shape and is nearing its completion. The Talanta Sports City Stadium is set to take center stage at AFCON 2027, a historic edition that will see for the first time ever three nations jointly host Africa's biggest football event. The sparkling new 60,000-seater facility, soon to be renamed the Raila Odinga International Stadium, is being built by the China Road and Bridge Corporation in partnership with the government of Kenya.
Totally, it needs 3 years exclusive the design period, but we spend 2 years. That is because we take many strategies. For example, we separate four areas called A, B, C, D, Zone A, Zone B, Zone C, and Zone D. Different area, we put the laborers work together. And also, we have a very professional employer team, and KDF team, and also Sports Kenya team. They have site engineer here to secure, to make sure the quality can be controlled all the time.
The external scaffolding has now been removed, and Kenyans have been awestruck by its beauty. It boasts of an ultra-modern design, highlighted by a computerized hydraulic tension cable lifting roof, an engineering marvel found in only four stadiums worldwide. Once complete, Kenya will become the fifth country in the world to possess this rare innovation, underscoring its growing ambitions on the international sporting stage. Speaking to CGTN, retired Kenya football captain and most capped player Musa Otieno believes the Chinese-built facility places the East African nation firmly on the continental sporting map.
The Cup of Nations is in our nation, and I think this is like our African World Cup. And we are Kenya, I think we are going to be ready. And in a sense that the players who are going to play, they're going to play behind, you know, or in front of their friends, their families. You know, we have got that opportunity of playing the big tournament in Africa.
Designed as a football-only venue, the Talanta features no running track, bringing fans closer to the action.
It is a modern football pitch where we don't have any athletics field around. The fans are closer to you. You know, they have said, I wish I was there, but it is not our generation. We fought for it. To the players, it is an opportunity. It is a big stage just for whoever is going to get that opportunity to go and enjoy.
The stadium will also feature a high-performance hybrid pitch, combining natural Bermuda grass with synthetic fiber, designed to deliver superior durability and playing quality.
As Kenya prepares to co-host the Africa Cup of Nations in 2027, Talanta Stadium not only stands as a sign of the country's readiness to host the tournament, but also hopes to become a new symbol of Kenyan football, uniting fans and inspiring the next generation of footballers. Mohamed Abubakar for CGTN, Nairobi, Kenya.
All right, still with me here in studio is our reporter Sadiq Shaban as we continue the discussion on the aftermath of the 2025 AFCON, as we also look ahead to the next tournament in East Africa. Sadiq, as we've seen from that report there from Mohamed, just how important will the Talanta, now renamed Raila Odinga Talanta Sports City Stadium to East Africa, staging a tournament that will hopefully meet the standards that you saw in Morocco?
By the way, that the Talanta Stadium, Raila Odinga Stadium, really resembles the Prince Moulay Stadium in Abdallah. I mean, and I was there a couple of weeks ago, and the ambience is really going to be like that, what we saw in Morocco. And just picking on lessons, as you said, going to 2027, Morocco will host a number of build-up events going to 2030, as we've been discussing. They will host the Women Africa Cup of Nations. They will host the Under-17 Women's World Cup, started last year all the way through to 2029. They're going to host the FIFA Arab Cup and the Club World Cup. Now, East Africa will also need a lot of build-up events and to ready these facilities. It's not just the facilities, not just the stadium. We've seen from Morocco and the delegations from Pamoja, the East African countries that were there. Mm-hmm. They learned about, you know, hospitality. They learned about crowd control and so many. So there'll be a lot of lessons. And we hope that going forward, CAF will give Kenya, Uganda and Tanzania a number of events, either the Under-17, either the Under-20 Africa Cup of Nations, you know, in future. perhaps so that this stadium, other than just hosting 2027 Africa Cup of Nations, there is a legacy project beyond 2027. But for just a year, we need to get the stadium ready. We need to get all our officials ready. The training has to happen. And this is where CAF will play a very important role in seconding some of the key technical officials to Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania.
Right. And still touching on that, with just about a year to go, maybe what are some of the key lessons that these three nations in East Africa can learn from Morocco in terms of being ready to host such a big event?
Kenya seemed to have taken a very big step towards meeting a very critical part of organization, and that is waiving the visa requirements for all the visitors coming into the country. We expect to see similar move by Tanzania and Uganda. In other words, the East African countries have to work on their customs laws to make it sure that it's easier for fans to travel from Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. Everyone is welcome in Kenya, but it's not really been defined so much at this point in terms of Uganda and Tanzania. Number two, the stadium has to be ready. CAF said the inspectors will be here. The first round is expected within the next couple of months, so we expect that the discussion about who will host the opening ceremony and the closing ceremony, particularly, and Kenya seem to have put itself really on a very vantage position. Mm-hmm. So Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania will have to get the accommodation, they will have to get logistics, but the key thing that came out during the final was the issue of crowd control, that Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania must work on that. But to be honest, they may not get to the level where Morocco really had, but I'm sure they'll make up for it through a lot of other things that are very peculiar to this region.
Right, and we're almost out of time here. Very briefly, before we let you go, Sadiq, in your honest assessment, having seen what you saw in Morocco, do you think that East Africa will be ready to host the 2027 AFCON?
Absolutely. I have no doubt in my mind that the East Africa countries are ready. We've seen the stadium in Uganda. We've seen Tanzania. The African Nation Championship in 2025 gave us a window into that kind of readiness. So just a few areas to tie around, and I'm sure the East African communities will be ready, and we cannot wait for the first match. In fact, Maya, people are saying, when will CAF announce the next host after the 2027 Africa Cup of Nations? These three countries will certainly be ready.
Meanwhile, Nigeria urges a value-driven growth as Davos Forum concludes.
Policy priorities are first and foremost, security within Nigeria, and that entails engaging our neighbors and our neighborhood. So that's priority number one. And Africa, it doesn't differ from the foreign policy objectives in our constitution. We have pretty much the same. And of course, multilateralism, respecting international law, and our obligations, treaty obligations, and the approach is that of strategic autonomy, the 4 Ds we've spoken about before, and we try to avoid ideological alignments and have a preference for partnerships of purpose, not alliance of obligations.
I want to talk to you all about that, because we're operating right now with a backdrop of such geopolitical and economic uncertainty. So how does that change how Nigeria positions itself?
For us, we don't have to change that much, because some of the things we're experiencing now are things that we have been saying as a country and warning against, and now they've come to pass, and we're happy to see others are seeing things from our viewpoint. So when we talk about security, when we talk about working together to combat terrorism, when we talk about the importance of trade, when we talk about working together on issues such as migration, these are things that we've been saying, that the world needs to work together. So we're happy to see a lot of countries are shifting to see things from our viewpoint.
I want to quote something that you said last year. Rich countries shouldn't approach trade with Africa as a game of Minecraft in which they secure supplies of natural resources, but rather as a relationship based on mutual respect and the need for Africa to develop. Do you think the world is getting that message?
Even if the world is not getting the message, I think since we see things that way in engaging with the rest of the world, we have to continue to remind them. And I believe that a lot of developing countries or global South countries share the same sentiments. So we will continue to push for that. And it's, it just makes sense, because if you don't domesticate production, processing of minerals, of raw materials to add value, then you're not going to develop and you will not be able to afford yourself, especially if you're growing, you know, geometrically. A country like Nigeria, 230 million, next 24 years, 400 million young people that need jobs. We're graduating a million young people into the job market, about 3 million others joining the job market every year, 40,000 engineers. You have to domesticate, and we cannot continue on the same path of being consigned to the export of raw minerals and agricultural commodities and never really becoming a manufacturer of finished goods. If you do that, then you'll be exchanging more and more cashew nuts for the same tractor. So it doesn't make sense.
Here at Davos, the voice of the Global South is being heard more than ever. Where does Nigeria fit into that picture?
We're not satisfied with how loud the voice is. We want it to be even louder, to become even more significant, because it's not just enough to hear it. We want to also see action. So, of course, Nigeria is central to that. And Nigeria, I was just talking about the Atlantic world. So if you look at the coastal Atlantic world, Nigeria is more or less at the center of that. It's the fulcrum. So very important. And we have linkages with Brazil, not just trade linkages, but also cultural affinity. We've always maintained very good relations with India, with of course China as another country. We were at the forefront of the fight against apartheid, so we've got that political affinity with the likes of South Africa, Zimbabwe, Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, Namibia, you name it. You know, Nigeria was a frontline state. So
if you want the voice of the Global South to be even louder, do you think maybe it's time to look at some of the global institutions like the United Nations, like the WHO, WTO, the IMF, to have more of a Global South perspective?
I think there's consensus now that something has to be done about reforming the United Nations, particularly the United Nations Security Council. I don't think I have met a diplomat or a politician that has said otherwise from any part of the world. So it's just a matter of what path is taken towards that.
What would it look like to you?
What it would look like to me is Nigeria being a member of the United Nations Security Council. And if everybody there are those that have a veto power, then Nigeria should have veto power as well.
Meanwhile, China's Shandong province tops 10 trillion yuan GDP milestone.
That's a major economic milestone.
Shandong's GDP in 2025 reached 10.3197 trillion yuan. Shandong has become the third province nationwide and the first in northern China to surpass 10 trillion yuan in economic output.
The achievement positions Shandong as a key growth engine for northern China as the region looks to strengthen its role in the national economy. Behind the headline number is a steady upgrade of the industrial structure. Shandong's three-sector composition now stands at 6.6% for primary, 39.3% for secondary, and 54.1% for tertiary industries.
Services contributed 59.1% of total economic growth, pulling provincial GDP up by 3.2 percentage points. What we're seeing here is a deeper shift in the China's development logic from prioritizing sheer scale and speed to emphasizing efficiency and quality, from isolated growth to regional coordination, and from reliance on traditional drivers to the rise of new productive forces. Together, these changes form the foundation of China's ability to withstand risks and pursue steady long-term growth. At the same time, industrial momentum remains strong. Revenue and profit in equipment manufacturing posted rapid growth, while industrial technological renovation investment rose 5.3% in 2025. Value-added output in equipment manufacturing surged 11.4%, signaling a faster modernization of traditional industries. Economic expansion has also translated into gains for livelihoods. In 2025, Shandong created nearly 1.3 million new urban jobs. As China looks to balance regional development, Shandong's breakthrough highlights how industrial upgrading, service expansion, and people-centered growth are reshaping northern China's economic landscape. Sun Ziyue, CGTN, Beijing.
Meanwhile, injectables gain popularity for faster weight loss.
But they'll be saying something. When you've lost weight, now you've not lost weight the way we wanted you to lose weight. When your face looks however, it's too chubby. This other way, it's you're looking old. Honestly, you just have to choose your struggle. And me, this is the struggle that I've chosen because I'm comfortable, I'm a better mom, I'm a better wife, I have so much energy for work.
I've done everything under the sun, much as weight loss. I've taken a balloon, the one you swallow, a gastric balloon, so that it helps you not eat as much. I have sewn my teeth together from a dentist so that you just eat liquids. I have done dieting, I've done keto diet, carnivore diet. I have done gym, I have done extensive things.
I get an injection weekly. It's been increasing doses. So initially we started at 2.5 milligrams, went up to 5 milligrams, went up to 7.5 milligrams, and we've been there for the past like 3-4 months. And it's been amazing. I have lost a lot of weight. I started at 104 kgs. I'm now at 74 kgs, which is fantastic. So I'm very happy.
I bought my first quick pen and I started my journey. And I can say it's been great. I was 94 kilos, which was pre-diabetic. And for a premenopausal woman like myself, it was still quite a challenge because you have things like endometriosis coming into play. You have issues with hormone management and painful journeys through the hormone journey of a woman. So for me, it's been quite a transformative journey. I'm in my 4th month. I have lost 20 kgs.
It's not a drug for lazy people. I know that's the biggest analogy for many people who want to lose weight. And also has become a problem, a big problem that causes a lot of stigma. People tell you, stop eating, exercise. Most people have actually tried that. They have tried their diet, they have tried to exercise, even going to the gym, amongst other things. There's also a genetic predisposition, it could be hormonal.
And with that, we have officially come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned now for the Onkonana Dengue program. From Indah Afa Happy Shishu, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place.